Hello, and welcome to another episode of Point to Point. It's the show where I drive from one place to another and try to get to the point. Today's episode, we're returning, both figuratively and literally. I am returning home from my very long drive, which you heard about yesterday. We got about 45 minutes on the clock, so it's time to return to the topic from yesterday. We're going to talk a little bit about my gaming history, how I got into games, some of the seminal Phil games, and hopefully it lines up and I don't end with 20 minutes to go. Where were we last time? I think I ended with the red ring of my original 360. And then, let's see, I think I threatened BioShock. So I guess let's get into it. So I think this is college time now at this point. My 360 had red ringed and I kind of abandoned it. We no longer got to play with the good old 360. I moved up to Madison after spending 2 years at a community college, and I moved in with composer Nick, who does the music for the main 70% Complete show. And I moved up there. And I think it was around the time of Skyrim is when that came out. I remember I moved up there, and I had a projector. So we put the projector up on the wall, and I remember playing Hawks on the projector. And for the most part, oh boy, I made it into the basement of the parking garage. Add another 5 minutes to the episode. So we played for a bit, and then Skyrim came out, and he ended up spending most of the time playing Skyrim. And I guess, like, I never understood Skyrim. It was not my thing. As much as I kind of talked about how much I loved playing Oblivion, Skyrim just did not, I don't know what it was. Like, maybe it was just because I was watching him play it so much that I felt like I got most of what I needed to out of Skyrim, but it just never really did it for me. I never really jumped in. I actually, to date, I have not spent more than probably a couple hours playing Skyrim cumulatively. I have tried many times to get into Skyrim. I've kind of done alternate start mods. I own Skyrim on PlayStation, Xbox, and PlayStation VR, I think. Actually, weirdly, PlayStation VR was the best time I've had with Skyrim. I think I ended up playing it for a little over an hour. I have the beautiful, beautiful ability to play VR games in full motion and not get sick. So I was actually just running around playing Skyrim, having a grand old time. And it was fun enough, but I just, again, like, never really stuck with it. So he played a lot of Skyrim, and I kind of, I dabbled around with more of the, I guess that was probably around the time of Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3, and obviously loved those games, loved them unendingly, still love them, and then the true, like, actual college party game that we got super into is a Rock Band. I kind of didn't mention this in the PlayStation zone because it just, you know, it was more of like playing Guitar Hero by myself and then kind of some Rock Band by myself on the home 360. But then when we moved up to college, that was like the game. We would have parties and we'd have friends come up and we would spend all night playing Rock Band. And I got, like, I got entertainingly good at Rock Band, I would say. You know, the classic three beer rule, playing on expert, good enough to have a good, fun time, make it look like it was easy, but I was never, like, a like a master level player of that game. Not what I'm into, but I've probably played over 100 hours of Rock Band 4, I think. We spent a bunch of money. I got my Cody and Cambria songs in there, so that was fun. We played a shitload of that, and I loved it. And then around that time, I kept playing other stuff. So this, we're talking about like Dead Space era. And actually, this is, speaking of Phil lore in video games, this is the first time I tried to have a video game website. It no longer exists, I don't think. There's an old Blogger website that I had, and it had like book reviews in there, including stuff like for that J.J. Abrams book, S. There was stuff about Mad Men. There was stuff about just like random blog posts. And then there was also two video game reviews. So the two video games that I have reviewed before this whole 70% complete endeavor was Dead Space 3, which I have good fond feelings for. I actually really like that game, as much as people think that it kind of doesn't kind of do the thing that Dead Space was so beloved for. I still like that game a lot. And a game that you've probably never heard of, but I also kind of enjoyed, because it was that time of licensed video games being weird, was the tie-in game for one of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies. I don't remember what it was called. It might have just been called Star Trek, now that I think about it. And that was the closest I ever got to like writing a formal review for something until, you know, I and like Logan and I started this thing up a year ago now. I like had a decent time with that, but you know, we're kind of talking about the 360 as kind of a means to explore games a little bit. This is also kind of, you know, rentals are down and almost completely gone. This is around the time that Logan and I are playing through the Army of Two games, this window of when I'm leaving community college, but slightly before I've moved up to Madison with Nick. And it's also the time when we got crazy into Call of Duty. This is Call of Duty Black Ops time. The halcyon days of staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning, or just all night, running firing range and having a blasty blast. This is the time when we are shaking our fist at the screen and saying, "Curse you, Treyarch and or Infinity Ward." This is like not really, but like peak toxic gamer time for your boy Phil. And it was fun, you know, like we had our multiplayer experience. Most of the time it was, I remember a couple of times when it was just like me, Logan, and a couple of other friends, just the four of us on two different Xboxes playing online. And that was great. Good formative experience. Probably the last kind of perfect Call of Duty experience I've had. We've played more in the intervening years, but really, like I look back on that time playing Blops as like a very positive, fun time. I know that if you ever ask Logan about his favorite Call of Duty, I suspect it is that one, because Blops 1 is the game that he measures most Call of Duties against. Yeah, it was a good time. But so moving forward, I guess, and now I will pay off the threat. Seminal game number four. It's BioShock. I played a pirated copy of BioShock on my Mac. That was, I think it was in like the wine wrapper or whatever. And that's how I played BioShock, which is probably one of the most important games to me. Like, it's that, it's KOTOR, it's, Mass Effect, obviously, Oblivion. Okay, so that's four. A BioShock is one of the first games that I have played that made me not just think about how I was playing the game, kind of like KOTOR was, like recognizing that there are differences in gender and differences in how the dialogue options are set up and, you know, the payoffs of those. But it is also, it's like the first game that I recall anyways, understanding and interacting with the themes of that game in kind of a really intense way. And what I mean by that is I went so sicko mode on BioShock that it basically was the catalyst for me writing my senior thesis. So I liked BioShock so much that I read Atlas Shrugged, that monstrosity of a book that Paul Ryan loves so much. I ended up reading that book. I wrote my entire thesis on utopian literature, starting with Utopia from Thomas More in like the 1500s, and then moving up through 1888 with Bellamy's Looking Backward, which is a fascinating piece of utopian lit. And then I read some early Russian scary dystopia stuff into Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, and then I kind of ended it with here is Atlas Shrugged, and then the final chapter was BioShock. And the whole point of the thesis that is overwrought and written by a senior in college is that utopian literature has like continued to progress forward, and it used to be about how great things could be in stuff like Utopia and New Atlantis, and then in the 20th century, early 20th century, we introduced dystopia, where the public consciousness has switched from, hey, look at how great everything could be if this one thing was different, to look at how awful things are headed, isn't it going to be bad when things get worse? And then you have Atlas Shrugged, which I argued was both utopia and dystopia, you know, depending on your perspective. Rand certainly had a perspective, but it's possible that like you could perceive either one of the like world states of that book as like positive or negative. And then the BioShock bit is, BioShock is a participatory utopia in some ways. So you play BioShock, and if you don't know, I guess, you play BioShock, and you are a cipher character who gets juice to use a specific currency that you use to upgrade your magic powers. And you get that from these people who are called Little Sisters, and they are, it's not worth getting into, but it's really grim, dark stuff. Basically, you can extract the currency that you need from them, killing them and kind of making the world state worse, or you can kind of let them free and get slightly less of the upgrade currency. And the outcome there is that, you know, depending on how many Little Sisters you save or kill, it impacts the ending of the game. So you get to participate in the outcome of Rapture, like whether it's positive or negative, simply based on, you know, how you participate in the economy of the game. I've just summarized 70 pages of research. You're welcome. But it means, you know, it hit me really hard. Like I love BioShock. It's my first game that is like, I guess I don't know if I would refer to BioShock as an immersive sim, but it's my first brush with something like that. And it very much like the other top five Phil games. It really informed my taste on what I enjoyed and what I liked to play, and kind of helped me figure out, like, you know, why I play a lot of games on story mode versus the challenge modes that are about, like, getting locked into the combat and kind of winning that way. Yeah, but BioShock, man, you should play BioShock. I should go play BioShock. It's real good. I love that game, and it is like had a very large impact on my life and how I critically view games and how I want to think critically about games mostly. You know, it's nice to play something and then hunt for themes and all of that stuff. Going back to AP English. So yes, I played BioShock. That was the end of my senior year. So basically, I think that was December 2013. And then I moved out from the house I was sharing with Nick. I moved in with my now wife. And I, because Nick had the Xbox, I never brought one with, I don't think. I don't think I had a video game console at that point. I played on my, you know, clunky MacBook Pro, but for the most part, that was, you know, that was small stuff that I would be able to get on there. I had, like, a particularly bad running copy of Borderlands that did not do it. And then I kind of just moved on. I kind of left gaming for a little bit. I ended up having, like, that was when we moved to the Boston area, and I just never really picked it back up for a while. Until this little thing that you may have heard of called the Xbox One. I don't know why. I don't know why I all of a sudden had this massive hankering to get back into games. So we moved out to Boston in 2014, and I was like angling real hard to get an Xbox One in 2017. And my wife ended up getting one for me for my birthday. And it was for Christmas, actually. I knew that she got it on sale, and then I could not wait. So like a child, I accidentally almost bought a second one, and she's like, no, I already got you one, here you go. And so I think one of, if not the first video games that I played on my return to video games was Shadow of Mordor, whatever, that game, the Nemesis System game, which again is it's not like a seminal game in my pantheon of games, but as a first return to video games after, you know, 2.5-3 years away, it couldn't have been more perfect. It was a very good, exciting game that had like all of the Batman stuff that I had liked when I played Arkham City. Shout out to Cody and Cambria for the Joker, one of the great video game tie-in songs. But it had the Nemesis System flavor on top, right? And like that was another like super fun thing that again like hit me with this notion of like, man, video games, you can do anything with these things. How exciting and innovative this is to like have video games be able to react to you in this kind of way. Little did I know in 2017 what would end up happening to Monolith this year, but you know, the promise, it was there. We could have had it all. So I played the Xbox One. I still have that Xbox One. I played it for a long damn time. And kind of at that point, I started ramping up my video game playing. I started like having a small collection, and this is where the Xbox One is where I bumped into another one of the top 10 games that make up who I am as a gamer, my little friend Dishonored. I will end up making one or several videos about Dishonored at some point, because Dishonored and Dishonored 2 and even the Death of the Outsider standalone expansion thing are not only some of my favorite games, I think they are just up there as some of the best video games I have played. Arcane, in my book, I have not played Redfall, so don't at me, but Arcane, in my book, can almost do no wrong. They have put out banger after banger, and I love them dearly for it. It's like some of the coolest immersive sim game design combined with just some of the coolest ideas. There are levels, two levels specifically, in Dishonored 2 that I think about constantly as a thing that you just like when you think about Outer Wilds as a game that you can only play once, like there is a joy and a surprise and a majesty that comes along with the Clockwork Mansion and a Slab in Time, which are two of my like favorite all-time levels forever in video games, in Dishonored 2. And Dishonored 1 kind of just like blew me away the first time I played it. It is such an impeccable game. I've been meaning to go back. It's something that Logan and I have talked about, is like a kind of like a play-along thing, because I think that it just like super fits our taste, and there's a lot to talk about in those games that I think are endlessly fun. And it is just an incredible video game, and it has like changed how I view games. And like taking what I was saying about BioShock as like an introduction to the immersive sim or like anything like that, like this has like completely done it for me. Dishonored is that game that very much changed the course of my taste to be almost exclusively this kind of game. Dishonored is to me a perfect encapsulation of how a like first person game can be a puzzle game and still have like interesting gameplay. And it's just, it's impeccable. Like, the lore of that world is so cool and so interesting. The art design is beautiful and, like, just unlike anything I've ever seen. Like, even outside of like, steampunky stuff, there is a fantastic twist in that game. And the combat is, like, truly fun, but you don't have to interact with it. And to my point about BioShock, where you can decide how you would like to, you know, deal with the Little Sisters, the incredibly smart thing to make the way that game works, to make it be a thing where the more murder you do, the worse your ending is, and that it is secretly tracking that stuff in the background, and that there is a, like, you can just go up and murder the guy at the end of the level, or you can do some clever contrivance that is the most, like, exceptional way to get back at this person for the thing that they did to you, is, like, genius. Like, it is the coolest thing, and I just love it so much. You should play Dishonored. It is, like, probably... Is it hyperbolic to say that it is at least in my top three favorite video games of all time? I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that, actually. Dishonored is incredible. It like fully changed how I think about video games, just as Dishonored 2 like continued to do that. Like, the fact that game is as good as it is after following up one of the best immersive sims made is like astounding to me. Fucking Arcane can do no wrong. Okay, then what? Let's see. So I played Dishonored. That was, like, huge for me. And then I think, for the most part, I just kind of plunked around. And maybe it's kind of less important what I ended up playing on the Xbox One for the most part, instead, like, compared to the stuff that I didn't play. So I think I did the co-op campaign for Gears of War 1 at some point, but I haven't touched a Gears since then. You know, I played Halo 2 on the original Xbox, but I've not finished a Halo game besides that one. I've played the opening to Reach, like, maybe once or twice, but hey, I read the book, so I know how that one ends anyways. I've not, like, touched Halo 3 or, like, any of that stuff. I guess Xbox One is probably around the time when I started getting into Destiny 1, which also is a fantastic video game that I enjoy so much. And then, you know, to be continued later in Destiny 2. But yeah, I feel like I built up a semi-decent backlog of games and like a, you know, starting to figure out what my taste is in general. But really, I think Dishonored is like the game for Xbox One that I really got stuck into and spent just a load of time playing. And it was also around this time, I think like towards the end of me having the Xbox One, I lucked out, and one of the jobs I was working at, I was able to like get, you know, good employee retention programs are you incentivize employees to give each other positive feedback and encouragement. So a friend of mine and I had a fantastic racket going where we would give each other what we refer to as good boy points for doing big projects and exciting projects, which would have, they're like points that you could use towards the things in like a weird company store kind of way. But the big important thing here is that the company store was connected to some electronics suppliers. So I ended up getting a 43-inch 4K TV, which I still use today. And I also got a PlayStation 4. And this was my first PlayStation since that PS2 back in my youth. And I started, like, it, because it was a slightly newer, I think it wasn't a Pro, but it was the Slim, I think. It was a slightly newer console than my One. So I started playing that a little bit more. I have some games on there speaking of games I haven't played. There are three games that are sitting on that PlayStation right now that I also still have and have dragged out on a few occasions. And they are, we will call them shining gaps in my gamer cred. The first is Persona 5 Royal. I have played maybe 5 days of that game, and it was fine, but I'm kind of waiting to see if Expedition 33 kind of brings me into the fold on that one. So Persona 5 Royal, I also have the original version of Death Stranding, not the director's cut, which is a game that every single time it comes up, especially now that we are in Death Stranding 2 season, I think about firing that thing up and seeing what's up, because it is both, if you have been paying attention to the streams I've been doing with Atomic Heart, Death Stranding strikes me very similarly of a game that is maximum my shit and also a thing that is entirely caustic to me. But I do kind of want to know. And then the third game, which actually was on the docket for me to do a one level of a time playthrough of, instead of Atomic Heart, until I ended up getting that, is Shadow of the Colossus, a video game I've never played. I got the remake of it on there, and I've always been meaning to go back and play it, but I just haven't. Instead, what I was playing on the PlayStation 4, and then which I later played on the Series X again, is, I guess, game number 6 that has shaped how I feel about video games, and I think is just, like, the most transformative game I have played up in that pantheon, and that is Control. Fucking Control. What do you say about Control? Maybe before we dig into Control, it's a little bit of more Phil lore. I work in tech as my day job. I kind of used to work in advertising, and then I kind of lucked out, got some jobs in tech, and that has kind of paid the bills ever since. But ever since I kind of made that jump to tech, I've been more and more interested and a little regretful, we'll say, that I went with an English degree instead of realizing slightly later in life that I think I wanted an architecture degree instead. So I love architecture. I I like the structure of interior spaces, and I like specifically residential architecture, but I just like materials and all of that stuff. So control is just like fucking cocaine. Like it is such an incredible exploration of architecture and like brutalism, and also like corporate office space, and just all of the design in that game is incredible. And I played it on the PlayStation 4. If you remember, the PlayStation 4 version of Control, when it came out, was a nightmare. It would like chug. I would have like 1 to 2 frames a second sometimes with all of the shit flying around. But I ended up beating that game. I left a couple of bosses because I just couldn't do it because of the frame rate stuff and everything. But I loved Control. I loved Control so much that at the beginning of last year, right when we were starting to spin up the show for Codex, our first episode is on the oldest house, because I went back and played through all of Control again, because it is like truly one of my favorite games. I love the design of that game, the ability to do so much with lighting and also never having a skybox is just like such an incredible achievement that like you don't really think about like how much the sky or like organic things like trees and the wind and grass play into how we feel about games and how we look at them. And somehow Control was able to be a video game that is composed 90% of concrete. And that's so cool to me. As a lover of concrete, I can tell you, it's pretty neat. And it was just like another one of those cool things. Like, as a person who does not engage with David Lynch media, or I had never even played Alan Wake before then, just the art design and the fluid gameplay and everything of Control just like really blew me away. Love that game. So yeah, I played Control on there. I think that was in 2019 when it came out. And now we are approaching rapidly the pandemic times, where I guess I picked up a Nintendo Switch around this time. I then picked up a Switch Lite around pandemic time, because obviously Animal Crossing came out, and it was the pandemic, and everyone bought Animal Crossing. So I was doing that, you know, file under Phil's love for architecture yet again. Also, interior design and all of the modern furniture in that game. I spent a lot of time in that on the good old Switch Lite. And I think, I guess, this is also Breath of the Wild time, right? Like, we're playing a little fast and loose with the timeline. But yeah, that Breath of the Wild came out. Mario Odyssey came out. I played Breath of the Wild. I think I finished it. But Breath of the Wild was a game that I couch co-opt with my wife, and she would play most of it, and then since she's not a gamer, and then when she was done exploring or came up against a combat challenge or a shrine that she couldn't figure out or couldn't get past, I would jump in and do that. So I technically beat that game, but she mostly played it. And then kind of the same thing for Mario Odyssey. We played the two-player mode for the most part, and I was the Cap. I played as Cappy and then kind of jumped in when I needed to. And I think that, you know, part of that is why I haven't gone back to play those games. It is also perhaps why Tears of the Kingdom has not stuck with me. But it's been kind of a fun time to kind of share games in that kind of way. I appreciated that a lot. Yeah, so that, and then let's see. Oh, actually, so there's two pandemic games that I played. So there's obviously Animal Crossing, and then the other pandemic Nintendo game, which I hesitate to say is in the pantheon of best games over all of those games, but Ring Fit Adventure, I spent too much time playing. During the pandemic, my wife and I were living in a 600 square foot studio apartment in the heart of one of the outer-lying neighborhoods in Boston. And we had a teeny tiny apartment. There was no room to do anything. So we didn't have any exercise equipment or anything. And Ring Fit Adventure comes out, and it was kind of an immediate hit. I guess like go see my post on the website about where are all the fitness games. Ring Fit Adventure kicks ass. I wish that they would make another one. That would actually be closer to a instant buy for me when it comes to Switch 2 games. If I were to get a Switch 2, that would certainly help. But it was such a good time. And again, like I really appreciate how you could gamify fitness in that kind of way. Like it started building better habits and kind of along with a bigger fitness focus for my wife and I, and like a slight dalliance before the pandemic in like personal training and stuff, like really helped play that game. And like, hey, I know how to do a squat now, so I can do 50 of them in order to beat Drago or whatever his name is. And like the gameplay mechanics of smoothies to do like buff stuff is like, I don't know, it just seemed like a fun inventive thing to play. And then the other pandemic game that I picked up, I guess it was a little bit later, in 21, I guess end of 20, early 21, I played the absolutely cursed version of Cyberpunk 2077 on the good old PlayStation 4. Holy shit, that game was fucked when it launched, huh? I beat that game. I have some extreme gripes with Cyberpunk 2077 when I played it. It was the 1.0 version, obviously, and it was busted all to hell. I've never had a video game crash on me more than Cyberpunk. It was damn near constant sometimes. And there's one bug in that game that I think about all the time that has kind of ruined my enjoyment of, like, kind of like put a black mark on that game for me, even though I really do enjoy it. If you completed the game, if you got all the way to the last level, there is an objective that you're supposed to meet Hanako at Embers. And if you do that, it makes your endgame save. So you go there and you like get stopped by the bouncer. And when you get stopped by the bouncer, it generates an endgame save. And that's your like point of no return save. Unfortunately, I went there. It gave you the, hey, we're going to make this save. Or, hey, we made this save. And then it gives you a dialogue box that says, hey, this is the point of no return. Would you like to proceed or not? And I clicked no. Because, like, oh, I got all these side quests to do. I'll go do the little side quests. Little did I know, 40 hours later, when I went back there and went through the entire end of the game, finished the game, and saw my ending, I was like, oh, there is obviously more than one ending. I would like to do this sequence all over again. The end game save did not change. It was still that one that was 30 to 40 hours earlier. And then I set down that video game and did not play it for another 4 years. It like bothered me so much. Like what a terrible thing to do. Absolutely awful. Despicable work. Speaking of the PlayStation 4, hit the bell. This is now Phil's number 6 most important game. Number 7, go through the list. KOTOR, BioShock, Mass Effect, Dishonored? Am I missing one? Perhaps I'm missing one. Number 5, Prey 2017. Prey 2017 is, I think, the video game I think about the most. It is my touch point for an immersive sim, even when the Deus Ex games are out there and even when Dishonored is out there. The System Shock games, BioShock, like Prey 2017, I would say, is a perfect video game. There is a probably hour and a half long video on our YouTube channel in a playlist called Next Level, and it is it's me showing Logan and walking through the opening of that game, and I think it is a perfect opening to an immersive sim. You should watch the video if you don't know how Prey 2017 opens. Or more importantly, since Arcane Lyon is gone now, you should just buy that game and keep it forever. Keep it close to you. Because it is an impeccable game. It is an alternative history, and the alternate history is, what if JFK didn't die and instead we had like the incredible Art Deco space station run by corporations in the future. And the whole thing is about perhaps a company called Transtar, who has a giant orbital research station, stumbled upon something they shouldn't have, you know, aliens, and are using them for research purposes, or the station has been hit by aliens. It's kind of hard to tell. And you have to figure out what's going on the station and ultimately escape. And in part of that is you'll find good old emails. You'll kind of enter simulations. You'll fly around this generally open zone space. You'll do stealth. You'll do some murder against the scary aliens. And you will sometimes just platform around the level with your fire extinguisher gun that is called a glue gun that just makes platforms for you. And it is such a cool game. You'll like go around the world. There's stuff to craft, like upgrades and like different things that you can make. You put just junk in a machine called a recycler, which spits out cubes, and then you put the cubes in your manufacturer device, and it spits out the thing that you need. It has like some of the coolest technology. The Art Deco, but in space, art design is incredible. You'll like run into other crew members who are hunkered down. So there's kind of this meta goal in the game to, like, since you are the head of security of this place and maybe one of the co-founders, you have to go and find the crew members. And you can find all of them, whether they're dead or alive, and basically just like track where their locations are. And you kind of like throughout playing the game, you have to recover your memories, find out what's happened, and kind of move on. It has an incredible ending, multiple different endings to play through, and it's just cool. I love Prey 2017. It has like the really cool Mick Gordon soundtrack that's like electronic and cool and like kind of vibey, but is not what you normally hear. It's just really neat. I'm a big fan of it. You should play it. Another Arcane game, obviously, but it is such a cool game, and it's like my design touchstone. Like when we talk about, you know, how much I love architecture and how much I like designing small objects, which is another passion of mine. A lot of that is coming from how cool the physical design of stuff in Prey is. It's also part of why one of the things we talked about when we were making the switch from Codex and Gordon Hamburger to 70% complete is that, you know, there's a focus on, hey, I want to like build things. I want to make things. And there are several objects in Prey 2017 that I would like to have a physical version of. Stay tuned to the channel. More of that to come. Prey 2017 is definitely top 10, if not top 5, if not top 3 video games of all time for me. Someday soon, I will be playing through that game again for a studio audience near you, because holy shit, what a beautiful thing. I also have always wanted to go back and play through Moon Crash, their roguelite mode that came out a couple years later, because that is also kind of a cool thing that I haven't dug into too much. Prey 2017. So let's see. We hit Control. Oh yeah, Control. Number 5, Control. Number 6, Prey 2017. We hit Cyberpunk. And then now we're kind of in Series X territory. So this is, now I have like reached peak video game is my hobby, and then not much further down the road, video game has become my hobby, but also I have a kid, so I don't play video games as much. This is also kind of my peak mobile gaming phase. So I've been playing mobile games kind of up until this point. It's kind of when I kind of went away from console games, I went on to mobile games and played a little bit there. There are still games that I played in that original mobile gaming phase that I still hold dearly, that are still downloaded on my phone, actually. And one of them is Alto's Adventure and Alto's Odyssey, which are just beautiful, like, endless runners that I think, as a person who never played Journey, like, this game is my journey. There's not, like, some incredible moment that happens in it, but it is very much my journey. It is a calm, meditative experience that I used to play almost every night before I went to bed. And it's just a, like, side-scroller game where you are on a snowboard and you are going down a hill, and there are objects to avoid, there are coins to collect, and there are jumps to go off of. And it's pretty basic, but you kind of do this, you get more currency, you upgrade your character, you can unlock other characters. And it's just a really cool, fun time, and it's, like, super enjoyable. I really like Alto's Odyssey a ton, and Alto's Adventure. Alto's Adventure, I will say, is the first game. It is less complicated, and it is it has, like, less stuff in it, and it has the most beautiful soundtrack. It is it's kind of like an incredible soundtrack because it's just one piano track that is. Like, it kind of is dynamic based on what's going on in the game, and it'll, like, play, and then if your run ends, it'll, like, end the music, but it never feels like, it's never jarring. It's just, like, a really beautiful, really beautiful soundtrack. I think that, like, if there's anything about this game, you should go listen to the music. It's really simple, but it is just so pretty. I love it so much. But yeah, I love that. There's a couple of others, like, obviously the Zach Gage oeuvre. I love Not Words, Good Sudoku. Those are, like, huge in the pantheon. The other game that kept me going on my commutes before the Xbox showed up is a game called Dots. And if you have not played Dots, you should get Dots. It's a very simple connect the dots thing. It's like Threes, but less punishing, and it's just connect the dots and see if you can kind of clear the dots faster and all of that stuff. Two Dots, also very good. Big fan of Two Dots. You should check that out. And let's see. We're coming to the end of this commute, and I have not talked about Elden Ring or any games post 2021. So let's see. Real quick speed run. Love Elden Ring. Elden Ring is a game that was my first Souls. And I played a bunch of it as a mage and then immediately hit my head against a big wall. And then I just quit playing for 6 to 9 months. Because it sucked, and it was around the time I was playing Elden Ring, and then my son was born, and then I played Elden Ring for a little bit longer and just kept hitting my head up against the game, and it was not doing it for me, so I just quit playing. I came back later, finished it up, and I still don't think it's, like, greatest of all time games, but it is a beautiful, beautiful experience, and I think that it's, like, really fun and innovative, and honestly is my Tears of the Kingdom. Like, I think Breath of the Wild was really cool and was kind of immaculate when it came out, and then Elden Ring showed me what the, like, kind of grown-up version of that is, and I don't mean that derisively, but it just feels like the kind of expansive top version of that genre. And then yeah, then Tears of the Kingdom came out and was not Elden Ring, obviously, and kind of didn't stick with me. I should go back, but it did not stick with me. So yeah, I did that. Let's see, what else? Oh, Outer Wilds. You should play Outer Wilds. If you have not played Outer Wilds, another fantastic video game. I think maybe like the big narrative here when we're talking about the Xbox One and like me picking up video games as a hobby more instead of just like a thing that I do in the background is that, you know, I got older. I started like reading more books for less for enjoyment and more for like critical thinking and like using like literature and things to, as like things to think about. And kind of my taste in games did something similar. I played games because I just like story games in general. I like stories. I like characters. I like when my expectations are subverted and that stuff. And that kind of has led to me gravitating towards those games, and also has, you know, that's kind of why 70% complete is a thing, or at least that's my part of it, is that I just like thinking critically about things. And my taste in games have kind of shifted that way. So this is when I'm playing Fallout 4, which is in the, you know, that video came out. You should go watch it. It's why I'm thinking about things slightly differently when it comes to Fallout 4, when it comes to Outer Wilds, another similar game, but something that I really enjoy. And kind of when we talk about, you know, Prey 2017 being this, you know, immersive sims are the way to go. Turns out they're not making a lot of those. So I fall into the category of more open world RPGs and like first person games that are exploration based. This is also kind of when I like puzzle games. I like mysteries. I guess like another, if we're filling out the pantheon of top 10 games, we've reached the part where we could slot in any four or five other games. But The Witness is another game that I think about a lot. The Witness is kind of a perfect puzzle game. You know, Jonathan Blow be damned. It is a fantastic video game that I think more people should play. It is, there is a moment in The Witness that I will not ruin for you. But if you have not played The Witness, you should play The Witness and get to the moment. And if it does not change your perspective on the world, then I don't know what I can do for you. The Witness is incredible. The Witness is the second game that, if I were to get a like the platinum trophy for, it would be The Witness. There's one final challenge in that game that my tone-deaf ass cannot complete. But if I could, I would happily have The Witness as a number two next to The Elder Scrolls IV, Oblivion. What else? Let's see. The more modern stuff is, again, like I'm starting to look at games through a different lens. I'm still like, I think to be like the most modern with what we're talking about, you know, on this show, and just kind of as like a final wrap up, I'm sure I've missed 10,000 games that I've played that I've like truly enjoyed, but to kind of round this out to where I am today and kind of where my tastes are and where I kind of want to go, when I think about video games, when I think about playing them critically, and when I think about kind of where my tastes align, like right now it is still very much in that immersive sim phase, right? Like I'm still chasing that high of Prey 2017. That's kind of why the news of Perfect Dark, the new one, not that one being canceled, has like bummed me out, because it looked like we were about to have a return to the immersive sim. And I love those games. I want more of them, and unfortunately they just are not blockbuster sellers that people want to put money behind. I also love puzzle games. Like Lorelei and the Laser Eyes is one of my favorite puzzle games, because it is like an incredible puzzle and like mystery, but it also scratches that same itch of, you know, I want to think critically about this. I have a, you know, 2,000 word script on a Lorelei and the Laser Eyes video that I've been sitting on for months now, probably, you know, 6 or 9 months. I think that is an incredible video game that I wish more people played, and I have a lot of thoughts on. And then kind of the third bit is the still the open world RPG. The thing that I have not talked about in all of this, which I now realize will have to be a separate episode because I gotta end this, I have played every Assassin's Creed game. Like, every mainline Assassin's Creed game besides Liberation on the PSP or the side-scrolling games. I've played every single one of them, and guess what? I liked it. Those games are, like, crazy and massive and incredible time sinks, and I am incredibly disappointed about what Assassin's Creed Infinity is. But yeah, I love Assassin's Creed, and I think we will have to talk about that at a different date as just like a fun exploration. So I also like a good fumblefuck, you know. And then the last bit here is like first person open world adventure-y games. I've started my adventure into like Souls like stuff with Elden Ring. There's an early 2-part Codex episode that we put out, I think last October maybe, on Flintlock, The Siege of Dawn, which is just like a really interesting and like hits that Napoleonic conflict stuff that I love so much. And that is it's like a faster paced Souls game, which is funny now looking at where Nightreign is. And I like playing, like finding new ways into genres like that. So I'm sure at some point I will go back to some of the Souls games, but you know, Flintlock was a good intro, and now I'm more open to things like Lies of P, which is something I've wanted to go into. And then also, you know, as kind of move forward, like to where I am now, I still want to try new things, I think, is kind of where it's at. Like I have spent a lot of time in gaming just like going down the same rows and like finding new or more interesting things to do in there. But, you know, primarily I've been playing a lot of the same games. But with Blasphemous, which is something I've talked about a lot recently, it is like, that is not the type of game that I normally play. Like that is a side-scrolling Metroidvania with Souls-like mechanics or whatever. And I really like that. Like, part of the reason I played that game is because I've just wanted to, like, I want to see what all the fuss is about with Metroidvanias. And the kind of the third avenue of that, like the next kind of thing I want to get into, I guess there's two of them. So the other two places I want to get into are, I've never played a Final Fantasy game. I have 10 and 10-2, the remasters of them on the good old Xbox. I've been meaning to get to them at some point. And then the last bit, like the genre of game that I have almost never touched because I'm a big old baby, is horror games. Ding, 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 number 7. And number 8? We'll recap later. Observation. This will be the last game I talk about because I actually do have to go. But Observation, I played on the PlayStation 4, and it is a horror-ish thriller game with flavors of 2001: A Space Odyssey, and you play as a AI on a observation station, space station, over the hexagonal storm on Saturn, and spooky shit happens. And it is another one of those like tense games that is like thriller more than horror, but it's just like a really good story throughout. The horror games are kind of the next place that I want to dig in. I've been looking at Still Wakes the Deep recently as maybe a Halloween game to play. Also, weirdly, Luigi's Mansion is a Halloween game I've been meaning to play, because as you've probably noticed, there's like 7 Nintendo games in this entire 20-25 years of gaming history here. I've basically, to like round it out, I am just still very much in a phase where I know what I like, and I'm trying to push outside of that to find new things. And I think the resurgence of demos, which is a topic I covered in a previous episode, like has really helped with that, because I can kind of play around and try new things. I would not have played a lot of the games that I've played had there not been a demo. And And I think that that's kind of where I'm going to go in the future. Like, I want to keep pushing those boundaries, finding new things, and, like, exploring all of the indies that really, you know, that I have not mentioned, because there are so many of them that have, like, slowly shaped how I think about games and kind of where it's going from here. But yeah, that's going to have to be the end here. I'll have to call this. This has been fun, kind of talking through this history. Like I said, there's like a billion other games I have not mentioned in here. I would have to like actually sit down with the list and see some of the stuff, because I'm sure that there are like true seminal top 10 games for me that I have not mentioned here, that I'm going to be very disappointed in myself in probably 2 hours that I did not mention. But yeah, thanks for hanging out on this long episode. I think this is officially the longest on record. So, yeah, thanks for that. If you've made it this far, you know who I am, you know what this project is. The links are all in the description. Like I said, if you like this, please let me know on Blue Sky or in the Discord, come hang out with us. Like I said, this original prompt came from a friend in the Discord. So, you know, hop in there, chat it up. Let me know what you think about this one. And, yeah, well, I think we'll talk to you tomorrow, if my voice holds up. Says, see you later. Thanks for hanging out, and have a good rest of your day. Peace.